My book.
Yeah.
Welcome, Chief Jansen.
Oh, thank you.
So we wouldn't want fire to start more than 10 minutes after its scheduled time. So please go ahead.
Oh, I appreciate that. Well, good afternoon, everyone. For the record, my name is Aaron Jansens. I'm the fire chief for Portland Fire and Rescue. And with me today, I'd like to introduce my team that worked so hard on the budget. We have Jay Guo, have Mark Whitaker, focused on the PowerPoint presentation. Julie Prawl is over to my right there. And we have Division Chief Fire Marshal Nate Takara, Division Chief Mark Kale, and Physician Supervisor John Ju, along with our BAC member, Budget Advisory Committee member Kathy McLaughlin in the back row there. And beside me, we have Bobby Reagan, who's also on our Budget Advisory Committee. And Bobby would like to speak for a couple minutes just when I finish. So I know we have a lot of material to go through. I believe you've received a supplemental budget material that you've probably all gone through. So I'm going to launch into our presentation. I'm going to move through it very quickly, and it looks like we'll have robust conversation after we complete that. So I'll go through it very, very quickly. So to start, Portland Fire and Rescue in years 13-14 responded on 72,000 incidents. 9,500 of those calls were reported fires, or approximately 13% of our total call volume. Of the 72,000, 71% of those calls were all medical. Before you have on the slides, you have our 14-15 key performance measures developed in part with the CBO. The City Budget Office. Sorry, I'll do my best to avoid acronyms. You know, that's kind of hard for some of us. And I know that they've distributed those to you, but real quickly, I'm just going to cover them very, very quickly and say, for the most part, in the first half of 14-15, they are pretty stable, but we can go over more of them in detail if you'd like at the end. So what I'd like to start with is our significant issues. And what I'm going to do is identify what the significant issue is, talk about why it's important briefly, and what we've accomplished in the last year. Because there's a significant issue that we've identified for the next 5 years, we're not just sitting on our hands. We've been busy working on those things, trying to make progress. But then I'll also close with what we need this year to either just maintain or hopefully improve on those services for the citizens, and then also include the mayor's budget priorities. So our first significant issue is response time. And if you look at the slide, the color is a little difficult to make out for the viewers at home, but the predominant color up there is red, which isn't a great color to be. That indicates that our response times, which is the time from which we are dispatched to the time that we actually arrive on a call, is taking over 8 minutes to arrive. The time that we shoot for is 5 minutes and 20 seconds. That is a nationally recognized goal, 5 minutes for EMS calls and 5 minutes and 20 seconds, critical to both limit fire spread and perform life-saving measures. Portland Fire and Rescue meets that goal 62% of the time, with increasing call volume, density, and traffic congestion without additional resources, as you can see from the slide. This measurement has consistently slipped downward. What we've done to help is to add 4 RRVs to assist with lower acuity calls, freeing up the critical 4-person crews for more resource-intensive calls. We've also created a type code called Available on Scene that crews can use to be in service more quickly and available for the next emergency call that comes in. What we need to simply maintain emergency response throughout the city, as people expect today, is funding for 26 firefighter positions that have been funded through the SAFER grant for the past 14 months and for approximately 4 months prior to that. That funding will expire in December of this year, and we need to restore the ongoing funding to again maintain our existing service level.
So I don't understand the correlation there when you were discussing response times and then saying that you need the funding for them. Positions
okay.
That are currently funded.
That funding will expire
this
year.
No, I get that, but that doesn't address the response time issue.
with fewer resources. So response time is directly related to call volume and the resources available to handle those calls.
So the response time would get even worse, is what you're saying.
So response times would get worse.
But the challenge, and I apologize for interrupting, but it's probably easier.
It'll be a dynamic conversation, okay. I'm sure. I'm ready.
I'm going to say this before Katie does. It's unusual to see an equity map or a map showing that actually East Portland has got pretty decent response times in relation to the west side. There's few of our maps show that west uh-huh. side service is uh-huh. Worse than east side. So right. Are you going to get into what you would do to address those response time issues?
In the west side?
Yeah.
Well, great question. What we've done to address some of the east side issues recently is we added the rapid response vehicles. And because we had declining response reliability and response times on the east side, by adding the rapid response vehicles that are taking 77% of the lower acuity medical calls, that is freeing up the critical four-person crews to respond to the higher acuity emergency calls. And so that has actually picked up and improved our numbers on the east side of Portland. Does that
Chief, my assumption was that in the west side, you've just got different topography. You don't have a simple grid system. You've got lots of hills
Correct.
And That's vegetation and curves.
That is a factor also, which complicates things on the west side. Plus, there's a lower call volume. And so and we do have fewer resources on the west side. There's no doubt about it. But there's a smaller call volume to coincide with that, along with challenging geography. I'd love to see more resources, add another resource to the west side, but at the same time, we have a surging call volume on the east side, and it's difficult to take resources away when we've just tried to improve some of those resources.
The west side presents, it seems to me, sort of an inherent inefficiency in a fire in Portland in that you've got not very many calls, but it takes a long time to get anywhere.
Yeah, that's
so
very true.
We could improve the response times by adding another station or two, mm-hmm. but then it would look like even more extravagant in terms of how many stations per call on the west side.
That's very true. That's very true.
It would be interesting to look at an RRV mm-hmm. response, although, and you've previously had discussions with Tualatin Valley and some partnerships, right?
We share some boundaries there that we kind of go back and forth with our mutual aid resources, absolutely.
Related to the RRVs, I noticed that there was something in here that said that RRVs were only able to field like 12% of the calls because they focus on it. And was there one of the things that you guys are looking at is expanding the portfolio that's available to RRVs, and what would that look like?
You know what we're doing. We're going way into
All right.
a lot of weeds that I hope to. I'll probably just address again. So whoever's
okay.
timing me, they can just blow that time out of the water now. So what we're doing with that is we're trying to improve the efficiencies with those and look at some alternate destination, alternate transportation models. Right now, they're taking 77% of the lower acuity calls, and which is, again, freeing up the resources. But we're also looking at how do we triage, how do we dispatch calls, what are the right resources being sent to the calls in the first place, and then trying to improve response reliability and response times, as Commissioner Fritz pointed out, to other areas so that we can improve. If you improve the response reliability of a unit, you're going to improve the overall response time. And the only way you're really going to know that you're getting the absolute best response time that you can possibly get is if a unit is available 100% of the time when you call them. Right now, citywide, we're at about a 91% average, but that also varies from station to station. With the addition of the rapid response vehicles, we've kind of evened that out or leveled that out, because in East Portland it was certainly below 90%. And now with the addition of the rapid response vehicles, we've picked that back up, and so we're more at the citywide average. So that's been an improvement. Most of the stations on the west side have a better than 90% response reliability, but it is complicated by geography. So. All right, note to self that I'll make sure that I put my finger as soon as one of you ask a question of where I was at my slides presentation. So So I talked about our 26 firefighter positions that have been funded by the SAFER grant for the past 14 months, and that funding will expire in December of this year again, and we need to restore that ongoing funding to maintain our existing service level. This significant issue addresses the mayor's priorities of emergency preparedness and equity and opportunity. Our next significant issue is emergency and earthquake preparedness. The identification, this is identified as a mayor's budget priority. We now know the Cascadia subduction zone earthquake won't affect Portland as much as our own three faults, the Portland Hills, the East Bank, and the Oakfield, expected to be a magnitude 7.1, which given the proximity will cause building collapse, landslides, liquefaction, and given the majority of our structures were built pre-seismic standards, this obviously places our community at risk. Portland Fire's the lead responder in these events and needs to be staffed, trained, and equipped to respond. As essential facilities and with the completion of Station 1, all Portland Fire and Rescue stations meet seismic standards and should remain operational. We've increased our reserve apparatus 30% to place more firefighters in the field following any disaster. We've restored our drafting capabilities with hard suction line at every fire and rescue station. We're purchasing porta pumps for additional capabilities. We're converting emergency generators to dual fuel so they'll work in spite of a disruption of services. And we're updating our earthquake response guide. We now also have an east side technical rescue annex, so we have some technical rescue capabilities on the east side. And we'll be working with the Portland Water Bureau with their seismic study and identifying additional water sources as fires are a major threat after an earthquake. Again, what we need is ongoing funding for our 26 firefighter positions to respond. We need additional training bureau-wide for all firefighters on awareness level and additional operations level structural training for truck companies across the city. We're also requesting restoration of a reconfigured dive team. This would be at half the cost and improve the efficiency and expanded role of the dive team for safety, ensuring protection of firefighters performing marine-based operations, their ability to attempt rescue and resuscitation of victims that have gone underwater, and also faster recovery of victims than the county is able to provide because we're right there on the river. We also need to relocate our logistics facility for a couple of different reasons, one of which is to ensure additional resources post an earthquake, that our resources are secure and available, but I'll discuss this request in a bit. The mayor's priorities is
this. That's the Clinton Triangle.
Thank you, Commissioner. Mayor's priorities is emergency preparedness. The next significant issue is emergency medical services. As everyone knows, emergency medical services are 70% of what the fire service performs for the public. And because of the network and location of fire and rescue stations throughout the city, we're best positioned to respond. It's also an efficiency to not have to have another duplication of services. People increasingly require assistance for emergency medical care, and with healthcare reform, the dynamics are quickly changing. And Portland Fire and Rescue is not only a part of our community safety net, but we're working hard to be on the leading edge, providing best services that hopefully will reduce everyone's healthcare costs. What we're doing on this issue is we're using, as we mentioned earlier, we're using the rapid response vehicles on the lower acuity calls to assist in high call volume areas to help ensure the resources needed are available when emergency calls come in. We've completed a pilot called we call ADAT, which stands for Alternate Destination, Alternate Transportation. We've completed round one of that. We're launching into the second pilot, so we're calling it ADAT 2. And that pilot's going to include more partners. We work with the county to help frequent callers or HUG high user group on emergency calls to help get them better services and help to reduce that. First of all, to help the patient and help to make sure that they're getting the right services. But second of all, it helps to then relieve that demand on the emergency response services. We are awarded two separate innovation fund grants, one for an app to use. It's called Pulse Point. That should be launched in the next couple weeks. Also an in-field treatment method that we're either going to utilize, partner a nurse practitioner or a physician assistant or possibly a mental health expert and partner them with a paramedic, firefighter paramedic, for treatment in the field. And we're also working with AMR and other providers for various partnerships. What we're requesting in this issue is ongoing funding for our 26 firefighter positions to maintain existing services, 70% of which are medical related. Also, we're requesting ongoing funding for a deputy chief in our EMS or our emergency services section, emergency medical services section. This position is important for ongoing efforts in the emergency medicine section and to lead evaluation of the alternate destination, alternate transportation to outreach, the innovation grant implementation, and efforts with healthcare partners in the region. This meets the mayor's priorities of emergency preparedness, equity, and opportunity.
Chief, if you don't mind dwelling on that for a minute, one of the things that's always frustrated me about the medical response that fire provides is that we're providing a lot of medical care, but we don't get reimbursed by insurance. Mm-hmm. And that's even more frustrating in a world where everybody's supposed to have insurance. And it was always my understanding that insurers just didn't pay for what firefighters do. But recently I learned that actually there's a number of California cities that have started billing for medical mm-hmm. services, and they figured out ways to get private insurance to pay, in some circumstances to get Medicare to pay, in some cases to get Medicaid to pay. Mm-hmm. And Commissioner Saltzman and I and you have talked about that, and it was my understanding that one of the roles of this new deputy EMS chief could be to start thinking about that model and figuring out what we need to do in order to get some of our medical care covered by medical insurance.
Yes, thank you. That's accurate. We are working on looking at possible reimbursement models, and that is one of them, absolutely. So I think that that's a potentially great source if we're able to make that happen. So thank you.
And would this deputy chief be a sworn position? Is it necessary for it to be a firefighter as well as a medical expert?
Well, it's important that they're familiar with all of our protocols and so that they are able to work with all of our members and understand the issues that they deal with in the field and have the credibility to address the issues and have the leadership to be able to influence them and direct them with new protocol changes.
How then would you add in that medical expertise and that political expertise in working with other agencies and hospitals and funders, mm-hmm. et cetera?
We haven't had any problems to date that I have heard of working with any of the providers. I think that we've come together and everybody's been very collaborative and we've had very good working relationships. But thank you. The next significant issue is infrastructure replacement. This is identified as one of the mayor's priorities. We all need infrastructure to provide the services we do, and the infrastructure deteriorates over time unless it's maintained, and it's much less expensive to maintain as needed versus defer these costs until later, during which time more damage occurs. So what we've done is with the completion of Station 21, what Portlanders have done, is ensure that all fire and rescue stations have been seismically upgraded. Also with that GO bond, we're near completion of both the radio and apparatus replacement. For the Clinton Triangle that Commissioner Saltzman just brought up a few minutes ago, or the Clinton Station, we've been working with both PDC and the Office of Management and Finance on a needs assessment and identifying potential sites for the relocation of our logistics prevention facilities that are located here at the Clinton Triangle across from the Clinton Station. However, we need funding in order to move forward. So we're requesting one-time money to secure a new site and also replace roofs on four fire and rescue stations. The mayor's priorities that this addresses are emergency preparedness, complete neighborhoods, because we're relocating for the betterment of the city to develop the Central East Side. So with the next slide will be population growth. I think for many of us, and I'm going to lump us all together as the same generation, that the Pearl was the significant development in our generation. And since that time, we're now enjoying the South Waterfront and looking to the Central East Side and the Lloyd District. Historically, call volume is directly tied to the population. As our city grows, we need to be vigilant of the changes across the city and also work to keep our community safe through increased prevention efforts. So as you can see from the slide, population since 2000 has grown over 15%. And at the same time, call volume actually increased over 20%. So as call volumes have shifted, we've already spoke that we deployed three rapid response vehicles to East Portland to meet the demand increases. We have a better program to help the frequent user group. We're working on the alternate destination, alternate transportation too, to better manage resources and work towards cost reductions and potential reimbursements, and improving outreach and education efforts citywide. What we need in order to maintain our existing place on this issue is to at least maintain or receive ongoing funding for the 26 firefighter positions. The mayor's priorities that this achieves is the emergency preparedness and equity and opportunity. Our final, but last but not least, significant issue is equity. And equity is important because there's a long history of disparities in how services are delivered and opportunities are offered. An equitable Portland is the best Portland, and it's our job to work toward that. In our service delivery, we've done a phenomenal job and consistently built our network of stations to respond to the people who live, work, and visit equitably throughout Portland. But we've only in the last few decades begun to recognize the importance of reflecting the community we serve and the strengths we gain from this inclusiveness. This takes time. And the only way we have to become more diverse is to hire. As you might imagine or hope for, equity is extremely important to me. My management team is 40% people of color, 20% women of five, and both the leadership team and the Bureau Equity Committee have completed the Equity 101 training, and we're looking forward to the entire organization taking this training. Portland Fire and Rescue just recently appointed our first person of color to the rank of battalion chief. That individual also happens to be the second woman to hold that rank. That person is Sarah Boone. We're very, very proud of her. Our first recruitment in 4 years brought us more women and people of color than ever before during a recruitment. We're working to expand our very successful fire camp for young women to create a firefighter for a day to expose more people, especially those historically underrepresented, to a career in the fire service. During emergency operations, we're using tablets on scene for instant face-to-face translation services as needed, and we're just entering an IGA with TriMet to assist any person we're providing services to who needs assistance with transportation with a pass to use TriMet. What Portland Fire and Rescue needs in order to at least maintain ground is, again, our 26 firefighter positions ongoing, a training academy specialist. We also need funding. The training academy specialist was one of two positions lost in the 13-14 budget reductions, and the restoration of this position increases capacity at training and improves effectiveness, safety, and also helps the success of the candidates. Another issue with the equity is also the addition of the EMS deputy chief that we spoke to earlier with ongoing funds to help improve equity with the EMS and healthcare initiatives. The mayor's priorities this significant issue addresses are emergency preparedness and equity and opportunity. That concludes the slides I have, and I'd like to thank you for your time, and I know we're going to have continued discussion, but before we do that, I'd like to give our Budget Advisory Committee member, Citizen Extraordinaire, Bobby Reagan, an opportunity to talk for a couple minutes.
Sounds great. Hi, Commissioners and Budget Committee members. Thank you for this opportunity. Bobby Reagan, a citizen member of the Portland Fire and Rescue Budget Advisory Committee for the past 2 years. As Chief Jansen just presented, the Fire Bureau's top priority is securing ongoing resources for the 26 firefighter positions currently supported by the SAFER grant. That reflects the highest priority of the Citizen Budget Committee as well. As a Portland citizen, I want to applaud the Fire Bureau's initiative in applying for and receiving the SAFER grant, which has supported 26 firefighter positions as we weathered the city's severe budget challenges 2 years ago. As the city's fiscal condition improves, our strongest hope is that the City Council will allocate the necessary resources for these firefighter positions to maintain current fire and rescue services. In the late 1990s, I served as a neighborhood representative on the Fire Bureau's siting and design team for Station 27 on Skyline Boulevard. I recall the chief at that time explaining that the second hardest thing he does related to public process is to site a new fire station due to citizen concerns around noise, lights, and other potential disturbances. The first hardest thing, however, is shutting a fire station down. That's because neighbors and neighborhoods quickly realize that firefighters are great neighbors and that there are huge and very real benefits of local fire stations in terms of shortening response times for emergencies, providing proactive services like blood pressure monitoring, and offering a community room for use by neighbors. As the city's population increases and as we infill with more density and buildings with multiple stories, a basic expectation by residents is that when we call 911, we will get a prompt and efficient response. Already, budget advisory committee members have concerns about current response times. Yet, our primary request is that you begin funding the 26 current firefighter positions that were cut, then saved, 2 years ago. In my other life, I'm a school board member in Portland Public Schools. I live in your shoes, making tough budget decisions year after year, and I don't envy your role. When we prioritize our budget, we're always looking to protect the classroom, to protect our teachers, and to protect our ability to offer individualized attention to our students. Similarly, the Fire Bureau's Budget Advisory Committee hopes that you will work to protect our firefighter positions and to enhance the city's ability to offer citizens the shortest response time possible by keeping all neighborhood fire stations open and optimally staffed. So I want to wish you good luck as you prioritize. Thank you.
So how many of the 26 positions at risk, the least senior firefighters, how many of them are women and minorities?
I believe there of the last 26, because we've just been going through some hiring, I believe there is one woman and I believe three people of color. But I should verify that.
If you could get back to me, that would be great. And then several months ago, we had a presentation on the medical response, the RRVs, and you were going to come back to us with a report on mental health care, mm-hmm. rapid response. Mm-hmm. When can we expect to see that?
You know, we've been working with the police bureau as well as the county and some other mental health experts on that. It's a work in progress. I'm hopeful that we could meet with you in April and give you a report on what we found. I don't think it's done by any stretch of the imagination, but I think that we're making progress.
Yeah. Chief, of the 26 positions that we keep going back to, mm-hmm. Are any, or and if there are, how many have medical training? Are they EMTs?
They're all EMT basics. All Portland firefighters are EMT basics, and then approximately 30% of our members are actually paramedics.
Okay.
So everybody is at least an EMT 1 level or EMT basic level, and then, like I said, about 30% of our members are also paramedics.
Do you think then about 30% of the 26 that we're talking about are paramedic level?
That could be. I don't have that number off the top of my head.
They're really valuable people.
Okay.
To retain.
Okay, we can get back to you on that.
So regarding the Clinton Triangle,
yes,
you should talk to the post office because they seem to be negotiating a great deal with PDC for helping them to relocate. So I'm wondering about the ask right now, mm-hmm. when that property is going to be hugely valuable if the council passes mm-hmm. the Urban Renewal District extension. Mm-hmm. So what's the reason for the ask now?
Well, in order to relocate, I think that we need some seed money before that may happen, just to get some seed money to get started on and secure another site. We have been working with PDC for quite some time, along with just recently started with the Office of Management and Finance and trying to locate some properties.
Chief, in past years, I've poked quite hard at the issue of two-person teams versus four-person teams. I'm glad the RRV program with two-person teams mm-hmm. has been a good add. it seems to me that that comes back to the question of acuity for a medical call.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my day job is in web marketing, and everything now is about analytics, our ability to measure and correct and get smarter. I'm curious if we have a feedback loop where, you know, obviously emergency communications is making a judgment on acuity, I assume.
Mm-hmm.
Do you then compare that to what the person on the scene find and tune how you're making that determination of acuity so we get more accurate over time?
You know, I've talked to Commissioner Novick about this recently, and council was good enough a couple years ago to give us a fund a statistician position. And so in anticipation, we attempted, before we got the statistician, my team worked really hard to try and provide some good data for council while we were going through the process of hiring the statistician. And we developed this sheet we call critical data. Mm-hmm. And because what the critical data was, a lot of very critical interventions that we provide and information about the call, and it was check boxes. Mm-hmm. And we ended up rolling it out to our members. And then in the meantime, we ended up following up, and we've had the statistician for 9 months,
10 months.
Yeah. So we just got our statistician on board a little less than 10 months ago. It took us about 5 months to secure the proper software for her to work, which was a little frustrating, as you might imagine. But what we found was when she was going through our great critical data sheet that we had collected, found that we hadn't done, we kind of failed our members with not good enough training, honestly. And so we were getting really inconsistent data from that critical data. What she is working on now is actually going into our incident system and writing software so that it is going to pull out a lot of the measurements that we're looking for, and the comparison that you're asking about is one of those that will be able to be pulled out, and that we can just run a report. Our members don't really have to do anything different than what they're filling out their standard reports, but the critical data that we're looking for, we'll be able to run a report and just it'll pull it out of it magically. So that is one of the issues that we're looking at.
So how long until we would see that feedback into changing the decision-making processes?
You know, I think that we'll be able to have some of that information within the year, I'm hopeful, and so we'll start to be able to look at more of that. I think Dr. Ju probably has some more information on that also. Logged away in his head. He's back there kind of nodding. So some of it is out there, but I think a lot of it is we'll be able to provide more concrete information for you next year.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Chief, hi.
Yeah.
Couple questions back to the 26 firefighter positions. In the statement in your equity tool, you said that police and fire would not, or I'm sorry, fire and rescue would not be able to maintain current or deploy additional resources to neighborhoods which are ethnically diverse and or have a higher poverty rate compared to other areas of the city. So I'm not quite sure what that means or what analysis was done, if any, to determine where deployment would happen. Are there areas that aren't able to be maintained in relation to other areas that are? Is it based on call volume, assumption that it would be less? I guess I'm just asking what that statement is based on.
Well, if you look at where the rapid response vehicles are located, where we deployed those in order to help response reliability and decrease response times, which are good things, those were in areas where it is where there are more socioeconomic challenges, and that may be referred to that there may have been an assumption, but we have not identified where those cuts would come from.
Okay. In the appreciated the analysis on the benefits to low-income residents for the ADAP program, is there any disaggregation or is there any data kept on who avails themselves of those programs, or even geographically where it's most used?
Some of those things are done through, we know some of those items absolutely just by location. And so by pulling up specific addresses, we can identify some of those high user groups by addresses. Some others are, we don't necessarily track that by the demographics, and that's one of the questions that we have, though, for the future of can we begin to identify more of our not necessarily repeat callers, but just simply who's using our services more specifically. And so we're looking at that.
Right. No, I think it's just always helpful to be able to disaggregate as much as you can to know who your customers are, for lack
absolutely.
Of a better word.
I've got that question, even for who comes by our stations? Who are the people who know that they can come to their neighborhood fire and rescue station and get their blood pressure checked or bring their kids in to get a tour or just stop by? Who is stopping by and who doesn't know that they can stop by or who doesn't feel comfortable? I think that it's more that people don't necessarily know that the fire and rescue stations in their neighborhood have open doors and welcome them to stop in for those resources. And so it's kind of breaking down those barriers. And so the signs that, for example, that Commissioner Saltzman initiated to put outside the each and every fire and rescue station, we've gotten a lot of feedback of people saying, wow, I didn't know that I could stop by. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that. I just kind of thought that that's where they were and didn't realize that. So it's been a really good litmus test to kind of see. And now what I'd like to do is get tablets in the stations and then have surveys and then learn more about the people who are stopping by. And that way we can learn who's not stopping by and maybe find out why.
Mm-hmm. Which makes me think of one question as you raise this. Since there is now this fund that we got for translation of essential documents, are some of those signs or any of those signs translated into different languages in the different areas that the stations are?
The signs are not yet, but we're working on many of our brochures for sure.
Okay. So
on handouts.
It's an ask you can make of us to help in that regard.
Thank you.
One more, if I might. The home fire program and the community risk reduction, it speaks to, I mean, it sounds like a wonderful program, but it speaks to homeowners. So my question is, can renters participate in this and how is the information about this program being maximized so that people know to take advantage of it?
Yeah, well, yes, anybody can take advantage of it. But what we're doing right now is we're piloting it. And so we've got a couple stations that are involved, and then we've got where the station where people are calling and where they're finding out about it, and they're calling in and requesting that, and there's not a station participating in that pilot, then we're sending out fire inspectors to go do those home safety surveys for those pilots. So right now we're kind of trying to work out the kinks and see how it works and work with the local 43 on those efforts.
And again, disaggregating the data as to who the customers are, I think would be helpful. In
We are keeping that.
Right, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Chief, I am really interested in these dashboards. And I keep wondering, you know, are they going to be more of a public document? Is this something you're going to be sharing with the public, the dashboards? Or is this going to be more of a budget season only?
So the dashboards will be up online, so they all will be public. And in addition, the mayor is going to be convening performance meetings. And those are going to be on a monthly basis, obviously not with every bureau, but it'll be sort of a rotating bureau with the other commissioner in charge to go over sort of progress against some of these key performance measures.
Okay. So I was noticing that some of the measures are things that you have absolutely no control over, and other things are things that perhaps you do have control over, and that's why they're on there. And that's probably appropriate because when your incidence goes up, then other measures may change, but then you have both of those things in the same place. One of the things that I noticed is that there's different kinds of calls that you go on, and that isn't reflected in the dashboard. And I think that would be, I'm just giving you what I noticed.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed to me that that's an important, it's an important distinction between when you go out on one kind of an incident and or if you're going out on a fire. They're so different in what the outcomes are going to be. So I that was something I would like to see.
Okay.
I also noticed that there wasn't any kind of an equity measure. And if it's such a, if it is an important, and it sounds like it is, then it would be great to have some kind of an equity measure.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking perhaps it could be something to do with the speed of calls, perhaps for areas where there was a higher percentage of low income or something like that. I mean, I don't know what it would be, but I it would be nice to see something like that. And there was the other thing is just the language. I don't know what an ISO rating is. So there are some things that could be changed to make it very clear to the public what you guys are talking about.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I think it's wonderful that that we're starting to do measures like this.
Good. I do, too. I think it's the right thing to do.
Right.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Good feedback.
Mm-hmm.
My first question is actually for the CBO. The recommendation on the first thing, the FR5 for the 26 positions, you actually recommended an amount that looks like it's approximately half. So is that 13 positions that's being recommended by the CBO, or just the equivalent that they can?
Half a year's worth of
funding. I see. Okay, so this is for the budget. Okay, so just for 6 months for all 26 and then figure it out was the recommendation.
Yeah, half a year, but one-time funding. Go ahead.
So the recommendation was half a year for one-time funding. If you go through the review, you can see some of the potential impact that serviced as a proxy.
Right.
And we were basically reviewing a package that asked to look at closing a station or not. So some of our question for council is that the question that's on the table, is closing the station or not? Or is there something else that the council would want to see in the alternatives to be reviewed?
So just, to sort of, clarify, and again, the question we were presented with was sort of ongoing funding or not, and where we ended up was, you know, continuing one-time funding, continuing the positions funded for one more year. But again, putting that question back up to the extent there are additional changes in the service delivery model or other changes that council would like to see at the Fire Bureau, to make that really clear and ask the chief to report back on what some of those alternative delivery models might be. And to the extent there weren't additional changes, we said, well, you know, then go ahead and set aside the ongoing funding.
Mm-hmm.
For that, because again, because the closing the fire station did have obviously a material impact, not surprising, but the data that we received as well that the Fire Bureau provided, and I think they provided some additional data in their longer materials, shows closing that type of a station has a really big impact on response times, and again, I don't think that's surprising, but it sort of leads to that question of from our perspective, eliminating 26 firefighter positions without doing anything differently was not a good option. So the question is either to restore the funding or do something differently to maintain service levels.
Chief, isn't it true that there's 26 positions now that are basically assigned to ROVs, and you could maintain the existing number of companies at stations while still losing 26 firefighters? You just wouldn't have anybody in ROVs.
Sorry. Yes, it depends upon entirely what you do with them, but we have four RRVs in service, which equates to 8 people a day, which equates to 26 positions. So if we lost 26 positions, we'd be in the position of either losing all four RRVs or closing 2 companies or some combination thereof. Either way, it would negatively impact response times, because the addition of the RRVs really helped to bolster the response reliability and therefore the response times, especially in East Portland.
And we closed 2 companies 2 years ago, right?
Correct. We did a study, and we did a thorough analysis of call volume, response time, response reliability, and we found 2 double companies that had call volume that could be supported by an existing company. Plus, they had very good response reliability and response times from the surrounding stations in their area. The geography was very, there was good proximity and response in. We didn't have complicated geography like we do in the West Hills. And so we identified that we could consolidate those 2 companies in order to support the 4 RRVs and then reallocate those resources where demand had surged. So for an example, over the last 15 years, call volume, I believe, citywide has gone up 18%. Call volume in North Portland decreased by 10% over the same time period. And the same time period again, call volumes in East Portland surged 54%. So there's been a dramatic shift of demand for resources that we looked at and examined very carefully. So,
I thought that the RRV report was somewhat unimpressive in terms of, it didn't show what we had expected it would show in terms of vehicle savings, that it actually doesn't cost that much more to take a truck than an SUV. So that was interesting mm-hmm. to me. It did show the better response times in East Portland. Mm-hmm. But as we look at the entire medical system and the county is looking at its delivery system, as we're figuring out what we're going to do to have fewer police responding to people with mental health mm-hmm. care issues, I think that there is a discussion that should be continuing to have mm-hmm. about whether those RRVs actually are the best use of highly trained firefighter EMS paramedics. Mm-hmm. So I like the CBO's recommendation of one-time funding with the expectation it comes back next year. You know, potentially we could earmark ongoing funding, but dependent on the results of what happens over the next year. The other thing that has always amazed me is in the premiums that we pay our firefighters for doing different things. You know, when I was a nurse is a nurse, and I got paid the same amount whether I was making a bed, which a nursing assistant could make, or whether I was doing a highly technical dressing change. And I am concerned about, it seems like every time we're in bargaining, there's an additional, well, we have to pay a premium for being at the back of the truck, and we had a discussion last year about the concept of firefighters going into schools and then going to the apartments of the kids in the schools. And there was, I think, that tripped up on, oh, but we'd have to add a premium for that because that's not currently in their job description. So I'd like to see some discussion in bargaining as well as ongoing as to how can we become a 21st century unit that provides the services as efficiently as possible.
So this one's actually for the chief. So I was very interested to read about the ADAT pilot, and I was wondering, so where do those realized savings for the ambulances that are not taken, I mean, who saves? Is it the citizen or is it the...
Correct. So right now, when ideally, so I'm gonna speak in some ideal terms, but there are a lot of changes going on in the healthcare reimbursement mm-hmm. and throughout the system. So right now, the way the system reimburses an ambulance is the only way it will reimburse them for transport costs is if they transport to an emergency facility for emergency treatment. So people who've been lacking medical insurance, their only way that they could get any kind of medical coverage is by waiting until their condition's so bad and then needing to be transported to a hospital right. emergency department to be treated. And then the ambulance will be reimbursed and the patient's costs are reimbursed by the system-wide. What we're trying to do is, again, obviously to get everybody insurance, as Commissioner Novick mentioned, ensure that everybody has insurance, but also make sure that people get the right care at the right place at the right time. So that is trying to recognize that if we need to get people to their provider first. So if it's not a true emergency call, if they don't need to be seen by an emergency at an emergency department, we can get them transported A, to their provider or perhaps to an urgent care facility. If we can do that, currently ambulances aren't able to be reimbursed by that. And an ambulance is a very expensive place, way to ride to get there. So is it better to perhaps use a cab ride to get them there? So we're working with a cab and trying to do a model so that we can actually get people transported to their provider or to an urgent care facility for those lower acuity problems by cab. And then still it keeps the ambulances in service so that they can be transported the higher acuity calls to the emergency department where they belong.
Okay, I get it. I think that's a great idea. What I was going to suggest, and this is sort of piggybacking a little bit on what Chris was talking about earlier related to data, is it may be too early for you guys to really tell, but you might be collecting this already, is how much have you saved the citizens in Portland
right.
by having this program in place?
Right.
This should be in here. I mean, it's something that people want to know.
Yeah.
If you're doing good things, telling people about it is the best way to continue
right.
to get funding for doing good things.
Right.
And I wanted to make the same point for the frequent caller
mm-hmm.
program that you guys are, we talked about that a couple of years ago about people who are regular callers and
mm-hmm.
costing the city a lot of money. And to the extent that you've identified those people and you're remediating against that, if you could identify how often that's been effective, that's a way that you are saving the city of Portland money, and you should bring that back to us and
mm-hmm.
toot your horn about it a little bit, I think.
Yeah. I think for the frequent caller, I believe that there are about 500 calls per year that have been diverted. So the bigger key on that frequent caller program is getting those people the right services that they need to. So a lot of them have housing needs, mental health needs that haven't been addressed, or other social needs that need to be addressed. And when you can address some of those issues, those underlying issues, it's very difficult to quantify how much you're saving the system simply based upon the number of calls, but the system to overall health care is enormous.
Let me jump in a minute. I mean, we should be saving money for the health insurers and some providers. Health insurers wind up paying for emergency room visits. They'd rather not. Some providers tell us that they, although they make money off people who are recovering going to the emergency room, we talked to Legacy a couple of weeks ago, and they said that actually if somebody comes to the emergency room who's covered but they don't really have anything seriously wrong with them, given the way reimbursement works, generally they lose money in those visits. So what we're trying to do actually in BOAC, and we'll talk about this when the BOAC budget comes up, is we're talking, and Dr. Zhu and I were part of a trip to Reno last week where they already have this system. We're talking about potentially developing a system where we get a medical call instead of sending out both ambulance and fire immediately. We might, in some cases, depending on the couple of additional questions, send somebody to a nurse who will then say, you know, it sounds like what you'd probably be okay just taking a cab to urgent care. Mm-hmm. And we're talking to the medical insurers providers about paying us potentially to transition to that sort of model, because there would be cost involved to BOAC in doing that. I think with what FHIR is doing with alternative destinations, if they can show, I mean, and FHIR is doing this now with their own resources, if they can demonstrate that by sending people to the alternative destinations, they are saving the medical world money, then they can go to the insurers and providers and say, you know what, we've been doing something that saves you money, but it doesn't really save us any money. We could stop doing it. We think that you should pay us to keep on doing it.
Well said.
Well, I like that idea. I think it also, I mean, you're talking about potentially freeing up resources, particularly in the case of the frequent callers that are then available to reduce response times for other calls.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think that there is a direct good as well as the
sure.
indirect, at least until it's reimbursed.
Yeah. Thank you.
Chief, in terms of the earthquake preparedness,
mm-hmm.
you know, we always hear all the predictions and we're all like Fred Sanford waiting for the big one to happen. But in terms of collaboration, I guess, in talking with PBEM, Emergency Management, you know, they have their NET teams,
mm-hmm.
which are woefully lacking in diversity. And in the areas of the city that they exist are most predominantly not areas where there are communities of color, low-income families, refugee and immigrant populations, et cetera. So is there anything in your work that either collaborates with them understanding where the gaps are, or anything that Fire Bureau is focusing on or can focus on to ensure that those areas are not, in fact, ending up like the Ninth Ward in New Orleans? So is there a way that we can ensure that they are not left out of this, even though there's no NET team kinds of preparation for them at this point?
Well, it's a great question. We do work with PBEM quite often, and as a matter of fact, several of our firefighters are kind of lead trainers for different segments of the neighborhood emergency team training. As far as I have not looked at the diversity or the diversity lacking among the NET teams. I'm happy that you pointed that out. And I can certainly talk to Carmen to see if there's any way we can help to perhaps do some type of a more consistent outreach effort. And certainly through our recruiting also, when we're trying to do recruitments, that can be a part of that initiative. So I think that that's a good point, and we will look at that.
And Carmen is very clear about it. It's not something she's not trying to work on. Sure. I just didn't know if any collaboration or acknowledgement of the issue may be in the police or the fire bureau
sure.
as well.
Yeah, and we are a site that we expect people will go to if there was ever a catastrophic failure and people were not able to utilize their cell phones because all the sites were busy and we were in a disaster. We expect people are going to come to their neighborhood fire and rescue station. We don't expect we're going to be there when they show up during that because we're going to be out patrolling the area and trying to respond to different emergencies that are going on at the time. But we expect that NET teams will respond to the fire and rescue stations and operate ham radios and then respond back, relay emergency messages back to BOEC, and then they will in turn relay back to us. So there is a robust network, and that NET teams are assigned to each and every fire and rescue station. So none of the neighborhoods will be without those resources.
Thank you, Chief.
Thank you very much.